minorities and human rights defenders are targets of violence and other grave violations.
Civil rights defenders, Freedom House and Frontline Defenders are among the other groups organizing the campaign. Even though the G20 is an economic forum, the groups are hoping that the deteriorating human rights situation in Russia will be brought into the discussions. Björn van Roosendaal is programs director at the European region of the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association. He says the G20 may be more effective in bringing pressure on the Russian government than discussions at the UN or Council of Europe.
Those places are not very successful in making progress to improve the human rights situation. We feel that other places, in particular like the G20, should be used to address concerns and to bring attention to what's happening on the ground.
The coalition is not supporting some groups' calls for a ban of the Winter Olympics over the anti-gay federal law. Instead, the campaign will similarly push for people competing in and attending the Games to stand up in support of Russian LGBT community and human rights defenders. Екатерина Данилова, ФСРН, Санкт-Петербург.
And that's the program for today. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.
Do you think this war will ever end?
I don't know. They'll just have another one.
I want to get out of here. Don't you?
Not that much.
So you like it here?
It's not that bad.
You're in a foxhole with a war raging outside.
I know. That's why I'm sure glad I've got my WBAI.
Be glad you've got your WBAI. Become a member online at WBAI.org. Now, do it now.
You are tuned to WBAI,
I love my freedom.
New York.
Ah,
99.5 FM.
You gotta get me my freedom!
Indeed, this is WBAI New York, broadcasting at 99.5 megahertz FM, and we are streaming live at stream.wbai.org. Tell your friends. My name is Robert Knight, inviting you to stay tuned for Earthwatch on this dilemma of an anniversary day in which we celebrate our Prince of Peace in an event presided over the devils of war. And before this week is out, we may have reason to think even more deeply about the message of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, as the Obama administration is likely to prove itself once more the greatest purveyor of violence on this earth. I'm Robert Knight. This is Earthwatch. Greetings. This is Earthwatch on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. Today on Earthwatch, a dissident history of the real March on Washington for Jobs and Justice and the corporate contradictions of this weekend's ersatz rally in the District of Columbia, which itself still has no vote in the United States Congress. A review of civil rights and voting rights over a half century between yesteryear's presidential leaders and today's presidential spokesmodel. An examination of the contradictions of supporting the unconstitutional war-making of a president who has illegally bombed Africa and the Arab world, and who is about to do so yet again, any minute now, under liberals' protection of the color of his skin and their denial of the true content of his character, as he unleashes Al-Qaeda throughout the world and swaggerjacks the memory of Martin Luther King. Also, the very first public sharing of a view from inside the 1965 civil rights movement, with a previously undisclosed personal letter from Coretta Scott King, and the wretched role of a global soft drink manufacturer in desecrating the memory of black martyr Emmett Till, supporting misogyny, racial stereotypes, battering women, and a decade of support for a conservative anti-voting rights think tank. But first, these words from our sponsor, celebrating this weekend's Ersatz March on Washington.
I have a dream. My poor little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
There is only one Martin, but in the sweltering heat of a March on Washington, there is also Pepsi Cola and Mountain Dew. Quench your thirst for justice. One Martin, one Pepsi.
The bell for freedom still rings. The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it ring to know the bell of freedom still rings? The hammer for justice still pounds. The hammer for justice still pounds. Beating sound of the hammer for justice that pounds. When the world stop and listen, when will we all stop and see? He looks upon us with a frown to know that millions of babies still starve. Millions of babies still starve. We can't have the biggest heart if millions of babies still starve. And the innocent ones still die. Still die. We can't value life too high if the innocent ones still die. When will the world stop and listen? When will we all stop and see? Cause he looks upon us with a frown. Out of truth we won't let shine light of truth we won't let shine. Tell me, has the world gone blind? Light of truth we won't let shine. Long as there's life, there's still a day. Long as there's life, there's still a day. And I know that we can find our way. For as long as there's life, there's still a day.
Well, greetings. This is Earthwatch on the Pacifica Radio Network. In New York, we're broadcasting at 99.5 FM, and around the world, we're streaming at WBAI.org. My name is Robert Knight, and in this program, some reflections about this half-century anniversary of a unique moment in American history, assembled by the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, headed by A. Philip Randolph and coordinated by Bayard Rustin. The 1963 March on Washington for Jobs and Justice. And inevitably there were celebrations and recreations, trips to Washington, many speeches, and some congratulatory observations about having elected a black president, much as we have a black Supreme Court justice in the person of Clarence Thomas. We had a black Secretary of State in the form of Colin Powell. And with all of the emotion from what I remember of that time and my family's involvement in this movement and my own experiences in the south of this country, and my emotional release at some of the words and much of the music that was that has been presented over the past several days as we try to get back to the garden of a time when transformative politics was possible rather than digital politics, and sampling of trivial, lightweight opinions in order to maximize the number of voters who can be swayed temporarily over small things. I remember 1963 as quite a different time when we made it more difficult for J. Edgar Hoover to track us, when we would be involved in subversive activities like racial justice. Instead, today, everybody comes to a march or a rally with their ankle bracelets, inseparable from the digital phones that the past several months should well have taught us provide instantaneous moment-to-moment tracking of our locations and that are automatically recorded by the NSA, the National Security Agency, and voluntarily surrendered to spy spook agencies by the manufacturers who make you think you're getting a deal by carrying their spy device. And I just remember J. Edgar Hoover's job being much more difficult then than it is now. I remember the horrible espionage and manipulation and use of idiots to spend their days and nights writing slanders about leaders and tempting to mitigate the effectiveness of their work or of a movement. And I remember that in that time, not like today's ersatz marches on Washington, that as with the Reverend Dr. King himself, there was no hesitation to praise when appropriate, but also, more importantly, to condemn, to criticize, to rally, to oppose a president. Like when LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, was escalating Vietnam and Cambodia, Nixon and Laos and Southeast Asia, saying the same things that today's presidential spokesmodel, Barack Obama, is saying about the Mideast and the Muslim world. One minute he says Al-Qaeda has been broken down to no more than 100 people somewhere in Iraq. And then the fool goes on to fund the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group and the overthrow of one of the most developed nations on this earth in terms of education and services for its people, Libya. The torturous sodomy and assassination of Muammar Gaddafi on the instructions and details of a CIA agent. The abrogation by Obama of the inhibition against assassinations of foreign leaders. I think about, in his fury and frenzy against the openness of government and society that Martin advocated, his furious, his righteous fury in tracking down, punishing, and torturing, if he could, as they did Bradley Manning, Edward Snowden, of the NSA releases. And there was a time when public social rally activity was about a purpose rather than a narcoleptic celebration of someone who was conducting one of the globe's most racist military policies under the cover of a black skin, and thereby boomeranging the guilt and redemption that is attempted by people of goodwill. But Barack Obama has paralyzed the anti-war movement because we people of this day, for all of our nostalgia, have failed to understand his primary lesson to us. Judge by the content of character, not the color of skin, at 1600 Pennsylvania. And over the weekend, I felt like a ghost. I felt displaced, surreal, about the eerie silence of this man who overthrew the most progressive state in Africa, co-founder and supporter of the African Union, on his way to an independent monetary unit for all the nations of Africa. This done by Barack Obama, a black man. We speak about Oklahoma and the burning of black neighborhoods, but eerily on this weekend, No one spoke about the burning of apartment buildings by drones sent in Pakistan, Afghanistan, Somalia, Yemen, and places we don't even know yet by this Barack Obama. Martin would never let such a day pass with such an obedient silence based on color of skin. For he would see the content of character, and he would not be silent about the triplets of racism, poverty, and militarism. And every time somebody started to approach discussing this on the weekend rally arranged by the National Action Network and hosted by NBC Obama defender and protector, My Obama, Black or Wrong, nobody of any political weight was allowed to speak for more than 90 seconds on average, I'd say. Because at that event, for all of the goodwill of the people who went there in a true attempt to summon the ancestors and the spirit of ML, the arrangement of the event did not have an arc that bent towards education. In the most important sense, the maintenance of war, and as Martin repeatedly pointed out, its inexorable connection to the state of your economy and the growing disparity, and which was mentioned by people, between the incomes of people of color and majoritarian interests, or I perhaps should say minoritarian interests, the 1%, the Wall Street. What happened over this past weekend was different also, because there was no coherent strategy. There was no vow or pledge or booklet of what people would do when they got home. One of the genius things about SCLC and Bayard and the other organizers and participants is that there was a handbook, a booklet that was distributed to the third of a million people in Washington. Neither event this weekend drew more than, according to published reports, more than several tens of thousands of people. That's not important. What's important is that people of all hues and varieties and spirits come together and try to be among the other and find what is in common and in mutual interest. But there was a freeze on the discussion, and not a sad word was allowed to be sung about the behavior of America's first Negro president, Barack Obama. And the spirit, the soul of black folk, or anyone of a moral compass, should have far more scrutiny than that. There were no stunning performers. Instead, what we got was some pre-recorded beat sample. And whenever anybody'd start to say something, he'd go, doom, doom, bam, bop, ba, doom, boom, boom, ba, doom, ba. And they're hustled off the stage like the hook at the Apollo. And there were too many speakers and too little coherence. and zero criticism of the essential issue of this time, the unconstitutional war-making of a serial killer who gets a pass because of his skin color. And so I shuddered. I trembled in sadness and rage that we might have lost the message after a mere 50 years. Content of character, not color of skin. This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight. And if that were not enough, legends of the movement, like the Reverend Dr. Jesse Jackson Sr., they cut him off on Saturday at the Sharpton-hosted so-called March on Washington rally. They cut off Jesse Jackson. Doom, 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 in the middle of his speech, talking about maintain the dream. They cut off the brilliant and eloquent Julian Bond, who at the beginning of his speech said, well, I hope that introduction doesn't cut into my 2 minutes. And swear to God, the organizers cut off Julian Bond, the first black Georgia legislator. Astonishing. They cut off the grandson speaking on the stage of the Lincoln Monument, the grandson of Mohandas Gandhi. They cut him off. It was it was worse than eating chitlins to see the way continuity was chopped up in this ersatz imitation of the March on Washington that drew many people of goodwill and great spirit and great memories. It's not the people I'm talking about or where we're trying to get to, but I'm talking about how it appears to me our movement is under house arrest. It's under the containment of government spying of our hopes and plans and innovations. It is under the control of corporate interests and media monopolies like BSNBC, which will never say a word against Obama. Never. Never, never, never. And they'll bring in new faces and young anchors and try to pretend to be hip, but underneath it's the same old corporate message. You will support the president. You will support his policies. You will support the military manufacturing economy that is supported by Obama's trebling of the number of troops in Afghanistan, his administration's lying about Syria, his funding of Al-Qaeda in Syria, through Turkey, from Libya, and then he expands them until they're out of control, and then says, we need more money for more war to control Al-Qaeda. It's preposterous what's taking place. And he gets a pass because of the color of his skin, and he paralyzes the peace movement. As Glenn Ford and my friends over at Black Agenda report, Barack Obama is the more effective evil. And so it's with great pain that we look upon a half century of a noble African-American impulse that uniquely changed America for not only people of color, but also people of poverty, as we shall hear tonight. Here's another thing. One of the obscenities of this weekend's rally was that the organizers, while cutting off real legends of the civil rights movement, did not truncate the self-serving words of the latest face of color for a corporation that has committed crimes against cultures of color. And I speak specifically of PepsiCo, the Pepsi-Cola Corporation, which as recently as this spring was involved in some of the most sexist, misogynist, abusive, racist stereotypes in its advertising for Mountain Dew and other Pepsi products. So horrible that when we learned of it, even they had to relent. Here is one of the most obscene things that PepsiCo and Mountain Dew supported. The desecration of the name Emmett Till, a young black martyr in these United States about whom you ought to know. And earlier this year, there was released a song by Future called Karate Chop Remix that featured a fool named Lil Wayne. And Sony Records, in which, in reference to the 14-year-old Emmett Till, who was murdered in 1955 in Mississippi for whistling at a white woman, this tool of corporate race oppression, Lil Wayne, came into the song. And I'm going to have to use frank words because I'm quoting news events. Comes into the song and says, "Gonna beat that pussy up like Emmett Till." Yeah, he said that. And Mountain Dew and Pepsi Cola sponsored him. They were giving him a national contract to advertise and exploit and draw in the hip-hop generation, you know? And organizer of Saturday's event, Reverend Sharpton of the National Action Network, when this story popped, intervened as a former paid board member of the PepsiCo Corporation, and said, "We got to get together with the Emmett Till family." And that idiot Lil Wayne, made some stupid comment that was rejected by the family of Emmett Till as an apology. And yet, Reverend Al said good progress was made in the meeting with Pepsi, Mountain Dew, and the family of Emmett Till for their promotion of an artist who said, "I'm going to beat that pussy like Emmett Till." That ain't all. There's another fool who was sponsored by Pepsi. Calls himself Tyler, the Creator. And here, there's not only misogyny, there's racism in more than one way. He put together a Mountain Dew-sponsored commercial that features himself in the form of a goat going into a diner. And a sweet white young woman comes, you know, pie serving. and this goat starts punching and beating this white woman. Because it wants Mountain Dew. And as the commercial moves forward, it ends up with yet another racist cliche of nothing but Negroes in a police station lineup. And it breaks your heart if you see this woman with blood on her cheek and shoulder and a bandage over her head and a neck brace and crutches from being beat up by this nigger goat, voiced over by Tyler, the Creator, sponsored by Mountain Dew, a division of PepsiCo. Former paid board member L. Sharpton. And even more offensively, this Mountain Dew-sponsored commercial in the lineup has Tyler, the Creator, threatening this woman. Threatening the woman that she, you better not testify against a player. And I think about all of the cases, spousal abuse, injury and murder that occurs. To think that as we celebrate the civil rights and Martin Luther King, that within minutes of that anniversary, PepsiCo and Mountain Dew are engaged in these egregious behaviors, Sony Records too. And it wasn't Al Sharpton who brought this to the fore. Jesse Jackson said something about it. And but the key revelator, for those of the biblical tradition, John the Revelator, was Dr. Boyce Watkins, who published a seminal seething analysis about Little Wayne and gonna beat that pussy like Emmett Till. In a piece published in the Black World, in Your Black World, yourblackworld.com, called Mountain Dew Releases Arguably the Most Racist Commercial in History. And, yeah, after the word got out, Pepsi, Mountain Dew, dropped the contracts of these two fools. But, what does that say about torch passing between generations? What does that say about our own internal social security and maintenance of the dream? Well, let me ask you this question. What does it say that this past Saturday at the ersatz March on Washington, Reverend Al and the organizers of this event gave more time for a promotional speech at the rally by PepsiCo, Pepsi-Cola, Mountain Dew, gave them more time than many of the speakers who participated in the march in 63 and who analyzed the triplets of racism, poverty, and war that was not allowed to be mentioned at that rally. And I was a tremble to see, once again, the violation of Martin's words about content of character over color of skin when they trotted out a female blackface for Pepsi-Cola at the Saturday event in Washington, and not one word of apology, not one word of doing better, not one word about something that was bought, paid for, and forgotten. And part of the deal, in my opinion, was that Pepsi got to talk to black folks in a way that made it pretend as if they were responsible corporate citizens. This is the same Pepsi-Cola that for more than a decade supported the Koch brothers. ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council. And you know, they're the ones who, in many states across this country, promulgated the Stand Your Ground laws that was used as a fig leaf for the defense of the murder of Trayvon Martin. So I trembled in my foundations to see real people and critics cut off and Pepsi being given a royal crown at the Sharpton rally in Washington, D.C. this weekend. And now, some evidence. We're going to hear smiling faces of color from Pepsi. And we're going to hear the actual racial, anti-feminist, misogynistic material that PepsiCo presented. It involves frank language. This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight. And you're tuned to WBAI in New York, or perhaps streaming at stream.wbai in New York. And I could not believe that this company was allowed to speak, that there was such a violation by the organizers of what I considered to be holy ground at the Lincoln Monument. Here it is. First, you'll hear Lil Wayne and Emmett Till, and then you'll hear Misogyny by Tyler, the Creator, and then Pepsi-Cola themselves. This is Earthwatch, and here it is.
She must have been a baby when she started with PepsiCo. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Senior Vice President of Global Diversity and Inclusion Officer, Pamela Culpepper.
Good morning. It is a privilege to join you today to celebrate this great milestone in American history. Thank you, Reverend Sharpton, for your unwavering dedication and long commitment to improving opportunities for all disenfranchised people. PepsiCo is proud to partner with you, and our appreciation goes out to everyone who plays a role in fulfilling the mission of the National Action Network. Martin Luther King III, thank you for carrying the torch lit by your parents and for your role in creating and implementing strategic nonviolent actions to rid the world of social, political, and economic injustice. I am proud to be among the 60-plus PepsiCo associates who are here today to celebrate, reflect, and reinforce the values of equality and fairness. While I can't introduce all of my colleagues to you, I'd like to take a moment to recognize one. Let me tell you about Wesley Dickerson, who's out of our Washington, D.C. operations. Wesley was 7 years old when he watched Dr. Martin Luther King deliver his I Have a Dream speech from on top of his father's shoulders. He remembers his father telling him and his sister that the march mattered because it was about equality for all. 50 years later, Wesley is here with us today and has been instrumental in making sure that the logistics were together for today's march. The principles of human dignity, civil equality, and economic empowerment for all are core values for PepsiCo. Almost 75 years ago, we were the first major company to integrate its management and the first to elevate an African American to a vice president, 1 year before the 1963 March on Washington. We are dedicated to the ideals of this march and what it represents, and I am proud to stand on behalf of all of PepsiCo's associates that are here today and on the shoulders of those who made it possible for me to stand before you. I am deeply honored and grateful for the opportunity. Thank you.
I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
There is only one Martin, but in the sweltering heat of a march on Washington, there is also Pepsi Cola, and Mountain Dew. Quench your thirst for justice. One Martin, one Pepsi.
You've got a lot to live, and Pepsi's got a lot to give.
This is Earthwatch on WBAI New York and streaming at WBAI.org. I'm Robert Knight, and here now we actually hear the two offensive actions endorsed and sponsored and then canceled by Pepsi-Cola and Mountain Dew. The first one is short. This is Lil Wayne and his ignorant estimation of the importance and meaning of the life of Emmett Till.
Pop a lot of pain pill, about to put rims on my skateboard wheel, yeah. Beat that pussy up like Emmett Till, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What Pepsi hath wrought. And now, even more chilling, or equally as chilling, Tyler, the Creator, and his commercial, celebrating himself in the persona of a goat, beating up a woman, and then threatening her if she testifies about it in order to sell Mountain Dew.
I don't want it.
It's ice cold.
I don't want it.
Oh,
don't drink it. I don't want it. You get out of it.
You're a nasty goat.
Nasty.
Here.
Give it to me.
No! No! No!
Give me more. I want it.
Good afternoon.
You're never gonna catch me!
All right, man, we got them all lined up. Nail this little sucker. Come on, which one is he? Point to him.
It's me. You should have gave me some more. I'm nasty.
I don't think I can do this.
It's easy. Just point to him.
You better not snitch on a player.
No.
He's wearing the do-rag.
Snitches get stitches, fool.
Come on, it's the one with the four legs.
You thought you was gonna catch me? Keep your mouth shut.
No.
Keep your mouth shut.
No.
I'm gonna get out of here and I'm gonna do you up. Keep your mouth shut.
I can't do this! I can't do this! No! 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 No!
She's just got to do it.
Yeah, there you go. And how can our thinking about meaningful continuity of the history and dignity of civil rights be maintained under this kind of promotional opportunities for corporate backers of rally organizers and Obama defenders? Well, one of the things that is inescapable is the beauty and transformative revelation of the speech that Martin did give on the 28th of August, 1963. And everybody quotes one part and elides the economic analysis, the political analysis, because of the beauty of the words of Martin Luther King. And here now on Earthwatch, we're going to look at the speech through the eyes of historicity. Because in the writing of the speech the night before, M.L., you know, spoke to his close associates, and among them, Reverend Wyatt T. Walker famously said, "No, Brother Doctor, don't include that stuff about I have a dream. It's a cliche." Well, actually, as we shall learn, the I Have a Dream sequence is first publicly known to have been stated by King several months before at a rally at the Great Hall in Detroit, Michigan, one of several events leading up to the March on Washington convened by the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And so, instead of playing for you now what everybody else probably is. Here, you get to hear the, I wouldn't say rehearsal, but you get to hear the precursor of the great beauty of ML's speech at the March on Washington.
There can be no great social gain without individual pain. Before the victory for brotherhood is won, some will have to get scarred up a bit. Before the victory is won, some more will be thrown into jail. Before the victory is won, some, like Medgar Evers, may have to face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children and their white brothers from an eternal psychological death, then nothing can be more redemptive. Before the victory is won, some will be misunderstood and called bad names. But we must go on with a determination and with a faith that this problem can be solved. And so I go back to the South not in despair. I go back to the South not with a feeling that we are caught in a dark dungeon that will never lead to a way out. I go back believing that the new day is coming. And so this afternoon I have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day, right down in Georgia and Mississippi and Alabama, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to live together as brothers. I have a dream this afternoon that one day, one day little white children and little Negro children will be able to join hands as brothers and sisters. I have a dream this afternoon that one day, men will no longer burn down houses in the Church of God simply because people want to be free. I have a dream this afternoon that there will be a day that we will no longer face the atrocities that Emmett Till had to face or Medgar Evers had to face, but that all men can live with dignity. I have a dream this afternoon that my four little children will not come up in the same young days that I came up within, but they will be judged on the basis of the content of their character, not the color of their skin. I have a dream this afternoon that one day right here in Detroit, Negroes will be able to buy a house or rent a house anywhere that their money will carry them, and they will be able to get a job. Yes, I have a dream this afternoon. One day in this land, the words of Amos will become real. Justice will roll down like waters, and righteousness like a mighty stream. I have a dream this evening that one day we will recognize the words of Jefferson that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I have a dream this afternoon that one day every valley shall be exalted, every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. I have a dream this afternoon that the brotherhood of man will become a reality in this day. With this faith, I will go out, carve a tunnel of hope through the mountain of despair. With this faith, I will go out with you and transform dark yesterdays into bright tomorrows. With this faith, we will be able to achieve this new day. when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing with the Negroes in the spiritual of all, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty.
And there you have it, a unique perspective on historicity from the Detroit speech, 1963, I believe it was in March, of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, in which we heard the progenesis of the fabulous speech that he made in August in the Lincoln Mall in Washington, D.C. This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight. We're streaming at WBAI.org and broadcasting at 99.5 megahertz FM. And we have more. One of the other things is that a snapshot is not a movie. And for all the emotion, rightfully so, in regard to the anniversary of the March on Washington, it was a frame in a film, a dot in the line of continuity of transformation. And in my opinion, it must also be measured on a moving average of what happened not only in 1963, not only what Bayard Rustin tried to do with the same event in 1941, and then the 50s. The March on Washington was not an isolated event. It was a result of labor and churches that and community organizations that have been supplanted by the digital fiction of Twitter, texting, Facebook. And I think that lack of human contact is one of the reasons why people of color and conscience lose their soul. Because they're not breathing and bleeding together. But their activities are certainly being monitored by Obama NSA and the unprecedented espionage regime that we are now under today. So the 60s was a different time. But you cannot just take 1963. You've got to look at the period 63 to 65, in which the first big Negro gathering in Washington scared the bejesus out of people, as peaceful as it was. And within 2 years, two milestones of legislation brought forward by a white president, a Southerner, an effective legislator, unlike today's presidential spokesmodel, Lyndon Johnson, ramrodded through Congress the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Part of his stimulus was the ongoing protests in Selma and Montgomery, Alabama. And here now, we hear Reverend Dr. King addressing the conclusion of the march from Selma to Montgomery in order to put a context on where 1963 was going. And here now, Martin from 1965, to put a broader lens, a better context on the useless nostalgia of what was a very complicated social and political movement. This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight.
On our part, we must pay our profound respect to the white Americans who cherish their democratic traditions over the ugly customs and privileges of generations come forth boldly to join hands with us.
Yes,
from Montgomery to Birmingham.
Yes,
from Birmingham to Selma.
Yes,
from Selma back to Montgomery. The trail wound in a circle long and often bloody. Yet it has become a highway up from darkness.
Yes, sir.
Alabama has tried to nurture and defend evil. But evil is choking to death in the dusty roads and streets of this state.
Yes, sir.
So I stand before you this afternoon.
There's
a conviction that segregation is on its deathbed in Alabama, and the only thing uncertain about it is how costly the segregation is, and Wallace will make the funeral.
Yes, sir.
Our whole campaign in Alabama has been centered around the right to vote. In focusing the attention of the nation and the world today on the flagrant denial of the right to vote, we are exposing the very origin, the root cause of racial segregation in the Southland. Racial segregation as a way of life did not come about as a natural result of hatred between the races immediately after the Civil War. There were no laws segregating the races then. As the noted historian C. Van Woodruff, in his book The Strange Career of Jim Crow, clearly points out, segregation of the races was really a political stratagem employed by the emerging urban interests in the South to keep the southern masses divided and southern labor the cheapest in the land. You see, it was a simple thing to keep the poor white masses working for near starvation wages in the years that followed the Civil War. Why, if the poor white plantation mill worker became dissatisfied with his low wages, the plantation or mill owner would merely threaten to fire him and hire a former Negro slave and pay him even less. Thus, the southern wage level was kept almost unbearably low. Toward the end of the Reconstruction era, something very significant happened.
Listen to it.
There developed what was known as the populist movement. The leaders of this movement began awakening the poor white masses.
Yes, sir.
The former Negro slaves to the fact that they were being fleeced by the emerging urban interests. Not only that, but they began uniting the Negro and white masses into a voting bloc that threatened to drive the Berber interests from the command post of political power in the South. To meet this threat, the Southern aristocracy began immediately to engineer the development of a segregated society. I want you to follow me through here because this is very important to see the roots of racism and the denial of the right to vote. Through their control of mass media, they revived the doctrine of white supremacy. They saturated the thinking of the poor white masses with it, thus clouding their minds to the real issues involved in the populist movement. They then directed the placement on the books of the South of laws that made it a crime for Negroes and whites to come together as equals at any level.
Yes, sir.
And that did it. That crippled and eventually destroyed the populist movement of the 19th century. It may be said of the slavery era that the white man took the world and gave the Negro Jesus. Then it may be said of the Reconstruction era that the Southern aristocracy took the world and gave the poor white man Jim Crow.
Yes, sir.
He gave him Jim Crow.
Uh-huh.
And when his wrinkled stomach cried out for the food that his empty pockets could not provide,
yes, sir,
he ate Jim Crow.
Uh-huh.
a psychological verdict that told him that no matter how bad off he was, at least he was a white man better than the black man. And he ate Jim Crow. And when his undernourished children cried out for the necessities that his low wages could not provide, he showed them the Jim Crow signs on the buses and in the stores, on the streets and in the public buildings.
Yes, sir.
And his children, too, learned to feed upon Jim Crow, that has outpost of psychological oblivion.
Yes, sir.
Thus, the threat of the free exercise of the ballot by the Negro and white masses alike resulted in the establishment of a segregated society. They segregated Southern money from the poor whites. They segregated Southern mores from the rich whites.
Yes, sir.
They segregated Southern churches from Christianity.
Yes, sir.
They segregated Southern minds from honest thinking.
Yes, sir.
And they segregated the Negro from everything.
Yes, sir.
That's what happened. The Negro and white masses of the South threatened to unite, build a great society. A society of justice where none would prey upon the weakness of others. A society of plenty where greed and poverty would be done away. A society of brotherhood where every man would respect the dignity and worth of human personality.
Yes, sir.
We've come a long way since that travesty of justice was perpetrated upon the American mind.
I would like now to introduce a young singer from New York, Bob Dylan.